This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News, and I'm Mike Pesca. The Hubble telescope routinely glides along at over 17,000 miles per hour. That's more miles in 1 hour than most people drive in a year. And when it's time for a standard 3 billion mile tune-up, it's hard to find a Pep Boys 350 miles above the Earth's surface. You need half a dozen mechanics working in zero gravity on orbit around the Earth. And forget mail ordering individual parts. They can only be shipped by shuttle, and they could cost tens of millions of dollars apiece. The Atlantis shuttle crew is hard at work on the Hubble right now. So are things going as smoothly as an oil change? Joining me now for an update is John Morse. He's director of the Astrophysics Division of the Science Mission Directorate at NASA headquarters in Washington. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Morse.
Hey, glad to be here.
Well, thanks for coming on. And if anyone has a question, please give us a call. Our number is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. Or if you're on Twitter, you can tweet us your questions by typing the at sign followed by SciFry. And of course, www.sciencefriday.com links to this and all the topics. So how are we going in the Hubble servicing mission? What's been installed so far?
Hey, it's going really great. So far, yesterday, the astronauts installed the new Wide Field Camera 3, a wonderful new instrument that, as the astronauts have been saying on orbit, not only will it unlock the secrets of the universe, it will unlock more secrets of the universe. They've also installed what's called a science instrument command and data handling unit, which is sort of like a glorified router. It helps manage these science instruments, but it's a lifeline between those science instruments and the data being telemetered down for scientists to work on. And that was replaced yesterday as well. They also did what's called a soft capture mechanism, which is just a docking ring that they put on the bottom of the telescope, and this would help a future mission come and autonomously dock to it, and then it would facilitate deorbiting Hubble at the end of its useful life. Today, they're working on the gyros, as you heard in the news report. This helps Hubble point, and they're installing the first of two battery modules to make sure that it has good power generation over its lifetime.
I want to go back to the docking ring for a second. This is to be the last shuttle mission to repair the Hubble, is that right?
That's right.
So what will dock there? Are they not sure what kind of spaceship will be docking to it, and it has to be like a universal hitch on a trailer?
Yes, I think that's a really good analogy, that in the future we would take a look at how best to bring Hubble down with a controlled reentry. And that system is TBD at this time, mostly because the orbit is stable well past 2020. And but they've put, I think that's a good analogy, a universal trailer hitch. And as John Grunsfeld, one of the astronauts, said yesterday, you know, in 35 turns, they've turned Hubble from being compatible with the shuttle to being compatible with a spacecraft in the future.
The actual mechanical work, you went over, they installed a camera, they installed this hitch, but the mechanical work is just really difficult and time-consuming, and, you know, if you forget your specific wrench, you can't just go back to the garage to get it. So tell me about some of the challenges the astronauts are having.
The astronauts, if you watch any of the video, you can see they are very active doing their tasks. It involves a lot of movement in these very bulky spacesuits with these gloves that are not entirely nimble. If they forget a wrench, they can go back not to the garage but maybe to the airlock. They had to do that yesterday. But, you know, it's a slow process where the robot arm with the astronaut on board goes across the payload bay and drops down to get the tool that they need. If it's not on board, the pallet they have up on the end of the robot arm. So there is a little bit of going back and forth and contingency planning in case things don't work out exactly as they are. But the whole team, the astronauts, both out in the payload bay, inside the crew cabin, and the whole ground support team is very well trained for contingencies.
I read that at one point they were trying to unscrew the 7-foot bolt and nothing was working, and they just finally said, look, I'm going to apply maximum force. This is the last chance we got. And exactly like if I were fixing the sink. You know, you try everything, you're like, all right, I'm just going to lean on it and see if it comes out. I don't know what else to do. And what
right.
Did that work?
Yes, it did. This is when they were installing the Wide Field Camera 3 yesterday. What they had to take out was the Wide Field Planetary Camera 2, which was installed back in December of 1993. And so it is held there by what's called the A-latch. It's a screw that's you put one of your socket wrenches on and you try to drive it mechanically with it basically has a clutch system on it that if you apply too much torque, it will release so that you don't shear off the bolt, for example. So the clutch kept releasing when they were trying yesterday several times, and finally they basically got rid of that clutch mechanism, and Drew Feustel just wound up leaning on the socket wrench and wrenching that bolt free. And so we were able to take out the old camera and put in the new camera, and the new camera now has passed its functional tests, and we look like we have a really bright future there with a brand-new state-of-the-art camera.
Let's take a call from Joe from Mount Airy, Maryland. You're on with John Morse. Hello, Joe.
Hi. Hello. Good afternoon. I have a quick question here. Maybe your guest could expand. From what I understand, the new lenses that are being installed are so powerful that now, you know, once they're in place, scientists will be able to see or look back or into the universe all the way to the Big Bang. Is that correct?
It's approximately correct. What we do with this brand new camera I was just mentioning, the Wide Field Camera 3, is it has a new, very sensitive infrared channel, which will allow us to look at the births of galaxies. Actually, we go back and we should be able to see them roughly in toddlerhood. we're looking back, so far Hubble has been able to look back till a point about 800 million years or so after the Big Bang. And this new capability would allow us to look back about another 25% of the way to about 600 or 500 million years after the Big Bang, and we're hoping to see just how galaxies get started.
Galaxies are so cute before they're potty trained. Thanks for the call, Joe. Let's take another call. Let's see. Oh, yeah, this is something I've been hearing about, too. Edward from Piedmont, California. Hello.
Hi, thanks. I have a question. My understanding is that the Hubble is in a very high orbit and that the astronauts have to go up to that high orbit in order to fix it. And my understanding is that there's much more debris at that level and that the astronauts are in much more danger than at low levels of being hit by that debris. And I'd kind of like to know how that works, because if the debris is going at the same speed as the Hubble and the astronauts are in orbit, so to speak, then there would be no danger. So is the debris going much faster? Is that how it works?
John?
I think your intuition is correct, that if everything at a given altitude were orbiting together, they would all have the same velocity, and then, you know, why would that pose a danger? But I think it's because the debris gets scattered and would follow different orbits, that it's when you intersect debris along your orbit that poses a danger, and things can come in quite fast. I don't want to go too much into the debris issue. The real experts are in the shuttle program, but this mission was analyzed extensively over the past several months and deemed safe for the orbit we were flying.
And I think their threshold is somewhere around 1 in 200 chance of
collision
with debris. Which I thought was a little, I mean, I know it's less than 1%, but it's more dangerous than I realized. Let's put it that way. And they're accepting more danger than I realized. Edward, thank you. You get your question answered? All right. I think Edward's not there. And let's see. We'll take one more call from Greg from Santa Barbara. Hi, Greg.
Hey, how you doing? Good.
Go ahead. Do you have a question for John Marks?
Two quick questions. First one was basically if you could just mention the spectral response or the spectral ranges of the camera that's set up. I guess you've got several channels, an IR, probably a microwave, and probably a VIS, but if you could just let me know what those are. And second is up to 2020, does the Hubble require additional boosts in orbit, and how frequent would those be?
John?
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks, Mark.
Typically, on our servicing missions, we do the orbital boost, so taking the second question first. I believe the same might be true for this one, but the orbit that it's in right now, the reason it decays is there's a little bit of friction, which is the most tenuous of atmosphere up there, and the how tenuous that atmosphere is can depend on the solar cycle and how many sunspots and various other cosmic radiation that will come in and puff up the atmosphere, basically, and it will drag on low Earth orbiting satellites. But it's deemed that with a typical solar cycle, the orbit would be perfectly fine well past 2020. So there aren't any boosts needed, really, between now and 2020. Now, on your first question, the spectral range of the instruments, the brand new camera, which we've installed already yesterday, works all the way from what's called 2,000 angstroms, which is wavelengths down in the ultraviolet that don't penetrate our atmosphere, up through the visible region of the spectrum between about 4,000 and 7,000 angstroms, and then has this infrared channel, which will look all the way out to 17,000 angstroms, or 1.7 microns. So it's called a panchromatic camera because it goes all the way from the ultraviolet through the visible out to the near-infrared. I would be remiss if I did not mention the other new instrument that we're installing, which is called the Cosmic Origin Spectrograph, given that I was on the COS team at one point.
But what we're going to have to do is link to that from our site because we're out of time right now. But I want to thank you, John Morse, the director of the Astrophysics Division of the Science Mission Directorate at NASA. Thanks very much, John.
Hey, thanks very much.
And when we come back, some canine science. You'll never look at Sparky the same again. Stay with us. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.